Thank you, team. Good morning, Emmaus. How are you? As Tony said, my name is Jeremiah. I'm a proud member of the family here at Emmaus, and I'm so glad that you are here. I'm so glad to be here teaching again. I learned a lot of things last week. As I spoke last week, we'll get to that. But we hope this feels like home for you. We hope you feel the hospitality of God if you are here with us in this place this morning. There are some Bibles and there are some notes available to you. These fine individuals are walking up the aisle if you need either one of those, a Bible or some notes, and you will need these as kind of a parting gift. We'd love for you to have this. If you're not usually one that grabs one of these, go ahead and ask for one, and we will get that to you. Thank you so much. It's good to see familiar faces. It's good to see old faces. Well, not like old, not like that, but just like those that I've seen, you know, known from a while ago and still know today. Thank you for being here. If maybe this is your first time because you wanted to see someone who was up here singing, I want to let you know you've stepped into episode 2 of a series that we're calling How to Be Angry. And I can't confirm or deny the loved one that really wanted to get you here this week has anything to do with what's been going on. I had nothing to do with it. But this sermon series is called How to Be Angry. And how about you turn to James 1 if you have a Bible, and I'll meet you there later on this morning. James chapter 1. And we will get to it. Last week, we kind of opened up with an introduction about anger. But really, my takeaway, what I really learned from all the way from, you know, at the end of first service last week all the way until just a couple of moments ago, is there are a lot of you that also have puppies or dogs that really resonated with what I was sharing. And if you feel like you're on the outside of this joke, just know that we talked about anger and how essentially it's about control and fear. And our 8-month-old mini golden doodle gives me an everlasting souvenir that I am not in charge of my home, and that she will do whatever she wants, and I just have to deal with it. And there were plenty of you that came up, your message spoke to me like you would. And, you know, all individuals, too, all ages, genders, everything. That was really the takeaway, which that's okay, because really it was to make the practical point that anger is something that we all experience, and that's okay. There's plenty to be angry about. We talked about that. Plenty to be angry about. Angry and feeling angry is one of the 33,000 plus different emotions, and I can say that carries a little bit of weight as a licensed therapist when I'm not here guest teaching on Sunday mornings. So about 33,000, so if you have a teenager, you get to experience those a lot of times by lunch. All right? Number 3, we talked about that there's nothing wrong with feeling angry. There's nothing un-Christ-like for feeling angry. Feelings aren't good. Feelings aren't bad. Feelings are. They just are. They're what we use to navigate this human experience. So angry is no different, no better or worse than happy or sad or ashamed or embarrassed or delighted or disappointed, resentful, any of those. It's just one of those. They're like appraisals of the situation. So it's okay to feel angry. Many of us grew up in environments where we, and I'll talk about mine this morning, where maybe for any number of reasons we think that we can't get angry or we, quote, shouldn't feel angry. Or maybe anger was an emotion that was pretty constant growing up, and so we feel like, well, I don't want it to turn into that because angry looks like that. Just know that anger is one of the many emotions that even Jesus felt, that God feels, and we'll take a look at that in Scripture this morning. Number 4, this one's pretty key, and I appreciate the conversations that we had last week. Those of you that came up and we had one-on-one conversations, it's better to engage that way. For some of the specifics, and that's what we call BWAs, but what about? But what about? Angry is very complex, it's nuanced, it's not very straightforward. This is a kind of a general topic with very specific people with specific situations here in front of me. And so there'll be times maybe you have your own memory, your experiences, and you're trying to hear something, and your first inclination is to say, yeah, but what about? I want you to know those are valid. And those are welcome to the conversation. And there are times when maybe what we're saying here, there's a little bit of an exception to that. Just want to give room for that and even give room for you to journey with us together. That's why we're not doing this alone. This is why we're a community. We're a group of people breathlessly trying to follow Jesus on what his life and teachings look like. So there's room for those questions. So thank you for those. And just know that even this morning, if you have like, yeah, but what about, that's okay. That's okay. Maybe engage with someone that's nearby or one of us here throughout. And we have another 3 weeks of this as Pastor Nate will be picking up the torch next week. I'm going to cause a big mess this week, so he has to play cleanup next week. Lastly, is that anger is just the tip of the iceberg. Just the tip of the iceberg. And we use that as not as figurative as we think, more so than just an expression, but actually anger is what gets seen, the tip of the iceberg above the water. But what's happening underneath the surface is really, those are what we call the primary emotions. Anger is a secondary emotion. We usually feel something right before anger in order to feel anger. Anger is what gets seen, the tip of the iceberg. What happens underneath the water is really, really what's going on. And for many of us, there's a lot happening. And it's a part of our own healing to process that, to look at that, to reflect on those particular things. All right, so let's take a look at our working definition. Anger is the active displeasure towards something that's important enough for us to care about. And that last part is pretty key. It has to matter to us, something that matters to us. There's maybe a sporting event that happens maybe today. Let's just go, it's baseball season, Giants or A's. I want you to know, if one of those teams win or lose, it has no bearing on my emotional quotient today. For some of you, no shame, whether the A's or the Giants or the Angels or whomever win or lose, it has a big impact on your day. That's fine. That matters to you, all right? So it has to matter to you. It has to be something that you're against. It's our mind. It's our emotions' way of saying, I'm against this. I don't like this. I don't want this. And it matters to me, is what anger is, all right? And we have that continuum we talked about. And finally, the emotion or the illustration that I feel like really most clicked with us is that anger is the guard dog of emotions. And then we think about Pippa and that puppy, all right? Anger is the guard dog of emotions. It's just doing its job. It's protecting the valuable and vulnerable things behind it. Especially in our culture, for men, for us to say, when you said that, it hurt my feelings. I felt hurt. I felt disconnected from you. And I felt very alone. In fact, I felt lonely. That is extremely difficult to have that conversation than it is to say something in anger back to that person. To say, I'm upset because you said that. Underneath that might be, I was reminded of this particular time and I felt that way and I didn't like that. Or whatever is underneath the surface or behind what that guard dog is guarding, right? Those are much more vulnerable. Those are tougher conversations to have. And that's for any of us, but particularly for men in our culture, it is, for any number of reasons, it's a lot more difficult to have that particular piece because we see that as weakness. In fact, I would say the exact opposite is that it takes a tremendous amount of strength to say, I feel, and then fill in the blank. Just a heads up, feelings are just one word, by the way. Saying, I feel like that shirt is really ironed, that's not a feeling. That's a story. All right, and you're right, it is. Melissa mentioned, where is she at? She mentioned it when I first came in, and I was like, oh, I did a good job on the shirt, great. Okay, so we're off track already. Feelings have one word. So I feel like this is a hot day today, not a feeling, that's a story, all right? So sharing, I felt embarrassed when you said this when we were at the restaurant. That is more of those vulnerable conversations to have. That's what the guard dog is guarding, all right? Anger is that unpleasant reminder that we are not in full control. When you have kids for the first time or you're caring for young ones, that's a perfect illustration of it. They don't dictate your schedule, or you don't dictate your schedule anymore, they do. Puppies dictate how your day goes. It's 112, who cares? She needs a walk. We need to go outside. Perfect timing, because I've been at work all day, and now it's time to go out and sweat 3 pints, right? So we gave some practices instead of just talking about like what anger is, but we also discussed, here's some things that can help. Number one, I am not in charge. And I'm rehashing this because I think it is valuable and helpful, and not just review time, right? But for maybe repetition is what oftentimes that we might need. So really acknowledging this reality that I am not in charge, that God is, that he holds all things together. Paul writes that in Jesus, all things are held together. He's got it under control. We are not masters of the universe. He is. We do a lousy job at it. When things go not the way we want it to go, this is when we get angry. Things are out of our control. One of our biggest fears is being out of control, or maybe even if somebody else has control. There's some reasons for that that we can get to. Praying the prayer of Jesus, the first request, your kingdom come, your will be done. That's really hard because we might think, no, my kingdom come, my will be done, because I know if I do it, it's going to get done, and it's going to get done right. Yeah? That's that uncomfortable laughter right there, like, right? Okay, but rather, your kingdom come, your will be done. And then finally, us taking a look at when we're angry this past week, maybe even moving forward, what's underneath that? What's underneath that? All right? So that was kind of like episode one. You ready for episode two? It starts out a little unsettling, just giving you the heads up. So when I grew up, anger was an emotion that was around the corner at all times. But I didn't really know which corner, which is very unsettling. Not knowing when something's going to happen, it was usually my dad or my stepdad. And anger and displays of being angry were very unexpected, very alarming, very disproportionate, very confusing, very scary. And there are many times in my mind that I still have some of those memories. And you know, my mom definitely got upset, but I knew exactly why she was upset. I don't know if you feel that, but like, I knew why mom was upset. There were other times where my dad or stepdad where I really had no idea. And when you're like in second grade, that is very confusing and very scary. I remember one time being at dinner, and back when you're the age where you had a full cup of milk with dinner, which as an adult would be kind of weird to have a full cup of milk with your spaghetti or something, right? So I had a cup of milk that was there, and I was just being seven. It wasn't, you know, dancing on the tables or anything, and I hit the glass. It was a glass, and it fell to the ground, and milk went everywhere, and the glass shattered everywhere, and my dad exploded. Absolutely unhinged. And it wasn't like that was the fourth time that week I had done it. It was, like I said, it was just being seven. Accidents happen, right? That's why they call them accidents. And I remember sobbing because of how I was made to feel. I remember saying, I can't do anything right. I remember him not really jumping in to correct that and saying, no, no, no. I remember sobbing literally over spilt milk. So when the expression came, you know, when I got older, it's like, there's no use crying over spilt milk. And I was like, actually, I didn't tell the story, but like, I was thinking, it seems like there is. It seems like there's plenty of reason to do so. So growing up for me, from then on, being angry was like, well, you don't want to do that. Because people get hurt. Situations get uncomfortable and awkward and ruined. Dinners just turn into dumpster fires. So don't get that way. Now, just so you know, my father passed about 5.5 years ago, and I am glad to say that only because of God that there, our last conversation with me and me looking at him in his coffin was one of the best conversations we had. In that, I said, hey, seriously, you don't owe me anything. We're good. We're good. You were doing the best you knew how to do with all that you were given. You did the best you could. I don't blame you. I learned a lot from you. There were some good things I learned, but I also learned, here's who I don't want to be. And that's why if you come over for dinner and you spill something, my first move is like, well, let's get the broom. Let's take care of the accident, right? Because it is so ingrained where I'm at. Because anger, my childhood lesson was that anger was like this explosive weapon that could be used to hurt others or hurt places and situations. It was this weapon. In fact, in terms of, you know, what my dad, what he had and what he didn't have growing up, there's a song that's, it's like 20 years old now, maybe even older, and one of the verses in the song, it says, if your old man did you wrong, if your old man did you wrong, if your old man did you wrong, well, maybe his old man did him wrong. If you want to come join our band and sing forgiveness songs, we'll cut you like a sword and sing forgiveness songs. And the sword part kind of threw me off, and I think because it hurts, it stings. There's some healing that needs to happen in that. And for whatever reason, in that particular song, I just thought, about my grandfather, my dad's dad, and I was like, that sounds about right. So don't blame him. No one on my dad's side of the family owes me. And I'm explaining this, and I'm sharing this with you for a purpose in that, yes, it can be seen as this explosive weapon, but also at the same time, anger just as intensely can be used as a shovel, can be used to rebuild and restore and recreate and repair and to protect. It's all in how it's wielded. Because if we've talked about angry and feeling angry is okay, but that can't be, it can't just be just an explosive weapon. No, it also can be used something to protect. If you've had a situation where maybe someone you love was in danger and you responded in that fight or flight response to protect them, to save them, it was a bit as if anger, it was this thought of like, this isn't right, I need to do something about it right now, is what propelled you. It's kind of love in action. So it's the shovel that can also create. Think about a family that goes through a tragedy, and after some healing, they start like a foundation or a nonprofit, or they begin an event to help spread awareness for this particular thing that maybe took their loved one too soon. This is love in action. This is anger used as a shovel to rebuild. And there's also other situations where when tragedy happens in our lives and when anger can be used maybe to harm others, right? So it's like superpowers. Who are my Marvel fans in the house? Raise your hand. Marvel. You're all like, I don't know what we're stepping into, so I'm not going to answer. It's fine. I will share. No love lost for those that are Marvel. I like lost count after like the first Spider-Man like 20 years ago. So I respect to you all for all those movies and all those worlds. What I'm saying is they're superpowers. You can be a supervillain or a super what? Hero, right? It's how that is wielded. And thankfully, we have the words of Scripture to help us learn how to navigate it. How should we? We know what anger is, at least we might know a little bit better. So how should we go about this? So our question this morning, if it's okay to get angry, how should we go about it? And it's a one-word answer. It's a one-word answer. Slowly. Slowly. Let's go about it slowly. So if you're at James 1, now's where we meet up. We're going to start in verse 19. James is writing to a group of early Christians. Jesus has already been on the cross, rose again, ascended to heaven. The believers are there, and James is writing to converted Jews, to Christians, to Christ-following individuals and families. And for the first part of this chapter, the first part of his letter to them, he talks about hardships and challenges and difficulties. And then he gets to this part in verse 19. James chapter 1 and verse 19, my dear brothers and sisters. And you could probably see in your Bible, if you have it there in front of you on a screen or paper, or even if you're familiar with, like, there's a paragraph break that happens. Sometimes there's even, like, little titles that happen above this. We can see in this particular letter, the way that it is structured in terms of literature, is that this is like a new topic. This is essentially us having a conversation and then one of us saying, okay, so here's the deal. So starting something new, something for us to pay attention to. It's like a new scene in a movie. We're opening up and now we're at the park or wherever. So what's about to happen, James is saying like, okay, I need y'all to listen up for reals. Okay? So James says, my dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth and the evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. Quick to listen, slow to speak. That's the recipe for being slow to anger. That's our recipe. Slow to anger is one part quick to listen, one part slow to speak. And when we are angry, there is nothing more difficult, right? Stay with me now. We're going to maybe get not as heavy. Just think about maybe your having a meal with someone and you're having a disagreement, and maybe you're a little passionate about it. Maybe it's about sports or Marvel or whatever, something that isn't too big of a deal. And I'm sorry if those really are a big deal to you. No shame, all right? And you want to get your point across, right? And so when they're speaking, what are you doing? Someone be vulnerable here. I'm thinking of what I want to say, because my point is right, and I'm not really listening to what you're saying. I'm waiting until you take a breath so I can say, yeah, but here's this. So I'm not listening at all, because it matters what I'm thinking and what I want to say, because I want to be right. I need to win. I need to have control of the situation. So we might get upset. So when we are angry, it's very, very difficult for us to be quick to listen. It's the old adage, we're given two ears and one mouth for a reason. We should be listening twice as much. Right? Being quick to listen. This takes a lot, especially as, well, human beings. I won't say just particular people, just as everyone. Because we're so eager to make our point, to get the upper hand, to show them, to prove to everyone, whatever it might be, all those things are kind of behind this motivation to get our point across. We're quick to speak. We want to blurt out. We want to have the right answer. We want to impress. And there's all kinds of reasons for those things. But maybe you're familiar with that situation where when we are upset, what other people are doing, that doesn't matter. What matters is what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling, and I'm going to be quick to speak. I'm going to be very slow to listen. In fact, that's even if I listen at all. And that's about control. That's about control. And there isn't necessarily something wrong with taking control of a situation. You need that, especially in dangerous situations. You need someone to direct traffic, right? But it is when we take that for all of our lives and we say, God, you've done a good job, but I'm going to demote you, and I'm going to promote me, and I'm going to take care of all these things in front of me. I'm going to run my life. This is when things can go south. And there are reasons for that. For some of us, it isn't so much, I need to have control. It is, when I grew up, when other people had control, I got hurt. So that's why. And clinically speaking, psychologically speaking, I am with you, and there's a lot to unpack there. And God grieves at what has happened, and he's there with you in the long journey of healing ahead for maybe those situations where you are now, as an adult, feeling like there is no way I can let others have control because then what happens if it's what happened last time? That's a learned response. It was a survival skill. That's how you survived. That's how you're here in this moment today. Nothing to be ashamed of. There's nothing wrong with that. But I will tell you that there's a healing and there's a wholeness that God wants to offer by saying, hey, I can take control of this. I can handle it. I can be in charge if you'll just turn it over. One of the ways that we can show that we trust that somebody else is in control, when we trust that the person who's driving the car is going to get us there just fine, number one, we can afford to take the time to listen. Think about those conversations or those moments when you know that you're with someone who is an authority on a situation or can be trusted. It is very easy just to sit back and be like, you know what, I have these things that I want to say, but I'm gonna listen to her. I'm gonna listen to him right now because they know what's up. Even if I think I do, I know that they do. So we're going to a contrast now. When we trust someone, when we trust something, we can go into it with an open posture. Like, I can listen. This is fine. Number two is we're thoughtful and we're measured about what we say. We put some thought into it. We're processing what they're saying because we're listening, right? And so when we respond, we've maybe gone down like, if this, then that. Well, how does that affect this? Or help me understand here. Maybe we're a little more measured. We're slow to speak. And I have a little bit of a tool to help us before we leave this morning. So we're slower to speak, and then we trust that it's all going to work out. It's going to be okay. I have a friend named Jaime. There's a few people in here that know him. And for 20-plus years, this is like what's going to be, and I don't mean this like grimly, and he would be right here to agree. and I'm not meaning to build intrigue, but this is, I acknowledge it, and that is on Jaime's headstone, it's going to say, it's all going to work out. I don't mean for that to be funny or mean to anything like that, but that is, and that's the kind of trust he has in God, like, it's going to work out. And it usually does. That's just the kind of, like, that's how big God is in his life. That's how much he trusts. It's like, it's just going to work out. I'm just going to trust it's going to be okay. It'll all work out. Sometimes I kind of get upset at it because I'm like, man, what if it doesn't, though? And he's like, it'll be fine. Jay, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. I'm like, but what if it'll all work out. When we trust someone, we trust something, it's very easy for us just to sit and to listen, to process, and just allow something to happen, which is the opposite of controlling something. We just allow it to happen. So here's our trust test this morning, and it's kind of an uncomfortable one, and it's kind of finger-pointy, but know that I also, it's a question for me as well. So the question is, we want to find out how much we trust God. How much am I trusting God with this situation? How much am I trusting God in this season of my life? Well, here's the answer, and the answer is also a question, and that is, how often am I getting angry? How often is that happening? How often am I feeling irritated, irked, peeved, TO'd, frustrated, grumpy, angry, sleepy, snoopy? No, those are the dwarves, right? How often is that happening? Because again, follow the trail back. It is when there's maybe a fear of someone else controlling the situation, or we want to be in control and do a better job, and we trust that God is doing what he's going to do with it. It's like some things happen that might be disappointing, but that's okay. Because it isn't going to work out like that. How often am I getting angry is a good kind of temperature check for how much we're trusting God in this season of our life. Because when we trust him, we know we're just in the car, we're saying, God, you got this. So some tools to help us on the road ahead for this next week. How do we go about being slow to angry? And in fact, in Exodus 34, remember the movie with Charlton Heston that used to play on Thanksgiving years ago, The Ten Commandments? We with us? Do you guys, we know what Thanksgiving is? Okay, great. Great. You're like, I don't know what he's going to say. Like, we're talking about this one time. Ten Commandments. So it's a little bit after this, and Moses goes back up the mountain to try and plead with God, like, God, don't destroy these people. They've rebelled against you. Please don't do this. And God says, all right, I'm gonna renew this covenant. I'm gonna make a deal again with you. And Moses says, I want to see you. I want to know who you are. I want you to stand here with me. And God says, okay, I will. And he comes by. He's there with them on top of Mount Sinai. He says, Yahweh, my name is Yahweh, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger. It's like it's not his first impression, but like it's his first reintroduction impression of who he is, the nature of who he is. In spite of the rebellion inside of his people that he delivered from slavery, from Egypt, provided for them miraculously every single day in the desert, and yet they still complained. They began to worship other gods. This is not just a story about them. This is a story about us, Emmaus. In the midst of us turning our lives over to God, we turn our back. We go the other way. We complain. We whine. We get upset. Sometimes there's great reason for it. Sometimes not so much. And God says, I'm the compassionate. I'm a gracious God. I'm slow to anger. This is my character. This is who I am. So how do we do this? To take a nod from the world of recovery, there's a tool within those rooms. It's called pausing to think. Think before you speak. This might be a reminder for some. This could be brand new to others. So one way to be slow to speak, is to think before you speak. And you're like, okay, well, that's not very helpful. It's an acronym. So T, one, is what I'm about to say true? And that could be a showstopper in itself right there, because if it's not, probably not helpful to say. And actually, the next H, that is helpful. Is this helpful? Is this helpful for me? Is this productive for this conversation? Does this move this along? Is it more about me, or is it actually helpful to what's the dialogue right now? Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? I could kind of go back and forth on that one. So if it isn't that inspiring, that's okay. Just, you can kind of, you can see plus this and be all right, okay? True, helpful, inspiring, and then we have an N. Is it necessary? Do you really need to say that? Do you really need to say that, or can it just stay in our own heads? And I'll just say, our daughters, Bella 15 and Lucy 10, and they talk to each other. Or one of them is talking to us, and then another one will chat, and I'm not, you all are going to be wondering which one does which. I'm not going to tell you, because it's both. And another one will chime in and be like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'll just be thinking, like, was that necessary? That wasn't necessary to say. Like, they didn't need to have that. We're still doing that. I'm 43 years old, and I'm still doing that. We never stop doing that. So think about it. Is it necessary? Do I really need to be saying this, or can it be something that's like, it's good. It's great. Do we need to say it? And last, K, is what I'm about to say kind? Is it kind? Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? You're off the hook on that one. Is it necessary? Do we really need to say this? And is it kind? Think before we speak. You want to be slow to speak? You want to display trust to God who's making this world go around even when we don't want it to be? Let's think before we speak. And there's two prayers that I'm going to offer also that are said in the rooms of 12-step programs in recovery. That I will tell you in my life and the life of some of those close to me has saved our lives. We can talk more one-on-one if you'd like later. But there's one in there you're probably pretty familiar with, and that's the Serenity Prayer. And I want to give you a little history lesson, just real, real minor on the Serenity Prayer, because we know like the first couple of lines in the Serenity Prayer. You've seen it at Home Goods and Hobby Lobby and magnets and, you know, classrooms and offices and everything. And it's God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that cannot change, courage to change the things that I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Here to tell you, that's kind of the chorus of this greatest hit. It's kind of like the, we will rock you. And you don't know the rest of the song, but you know the chorus. We know that part. But I want to tell you, the rest of this song is so good. It's so good. It is so, so good. And this can be something you take with you. And I'm going to invite you to pray this prayer daily, if not multiple times a day, and to watch how it begins to change who you are and how you show up in the world. To begin to act and move in the world like Jesus, slow to speak, quick to listen, slow to anger. So the prayer, actually by Reinhold Niebuhr, he's a theologian, a philosopher. He taught at Yale, and there's a lot of history behind it on which pieces got transferred from which journal here and there. But for the most part, here's the full version of the prayer. Again, you're familiar with the chorus that starts at the beginning. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. I want you to know, everything outside of you, you cannot change. You have no control over it. No control. It's all an illusion. I'm going to end with some really bad news for some of you. We can barely control ourselves. People, places, and things, you can't do it. And when you try and do it, it's going to bring disappointment and resentment and anger. That's like another sermon for another time. But there's that. We can only control ourselves. Courage. Give me the courage to change the things I can and wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time. Enjoying one moment at a time. This next one's tough. Accepting hardship as a pathway to peace. This is like James 1 to 18. It can be summed up in that line. Accepting hardship as a pathway to peace. Taking, just like Jesus did, this sinful world, just as it is, not as I would have it. That is a perfect picture of trusting in Yahweh. I'm going to take this sinful world just as it is, not as I would have it, just like Jesus did, trusting that he will make all things right, not me, not us. He will make all things right if I surrender to his will. So I can be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with him in the next. What a song. What a prayer. What a prayer. Finally, we'll end with this one for you, and that is, I will read it once for us as, I'll personalize it for us as a community, but it's the prayer of St. Francis, one of his famous ones, born in Italy, 12th, 13th century. I'm almost certain you've heard about him from Pastor Nate or other staff, and his prayer again, can be something that equips us to be an agent of peace, to be someone that carries the shovel into relationships and into places, not to use it as a weapon, but to use it to restore and rebuild. So I'll pray it over us as a community, and we'll continue worshiping. Lord, make us an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let us sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. Divine Master, grant that we may not so much seek to be consoled as much as we want to console others. Help us not to be so focused on being understood, but more so to understand others. Help us not be so focused on ourselves, on receiving love, but to love others, for it's in giving that we receive, pardoning that we are pardoned, and dying that we are born to eternal life. Amen. Would you stand with me, please, if you're able? We're going to continue to worship here at the table. But before that, you'll have time to maybe freshen up your coffee, go to the bathroom.